the phoenix that rises from the ashes, yeah, that's what we want to keep alive. That vibe, that vibration, yeah, that from this thing that has happened, yeah, that at some point we will be able to transform things and spread our wings.
In the limelight. The Justice Department will tighten its rules for when law enforcement officials may seize information about members of Congress and their aides. Attorney General Merrick Garland said on Monday, 14th of June, amid a backlash to the disclosure of a 2018 subpoena that swept in data from the Apple accounts of Democratic lawmakers and staff. The article you're about to hear has been written by the New York Times journalist Charlie Savage. The piece is titled, Justice Department Will Toughen Rules for Seizing Lawmakers' Data, Garland Says. Justice Department may tighten its rules for when law enforcement officials may seize information about members of Congress and their aides. Attorney General Merrick Garland said on Monday, 14th of June, amid a backlash to the disclosure of a 2018 subpoena that swept in data from the Apple accounts of Democratic lawmakers and their staff. Later in the day, Merrick Garland also met with leaders of the New York Times, CNN, and the Washington Post, after the disclosure of the Trump Justice Department had secretly seized phone records of reporters at each outlet in search of their sources. President Joe Biden and Attorney General Merrick Garland have said that prosecutors will no longer be permitted to use that tactic. The two events underscored how recent revelations displaying the power of prosecutors to secretly seize records from phone and technology companies for leak investigations have become a major political headache for the Biden-era Justice Department, even as many questions remain about the context. David McGraw, a New York Times newsroom lawyer who attended the meeting with his publisher, A.G. Sulzberger, portrayed the discussion about restricting the ability of leak hunters to go after reporters' data as positive. Under an agreement, news executives were permitted to disclose what they said, but Attorney General Merrick Garland's responses were off the record. In today's meeting, we once again sought a full accounting of what happened and requested that the Department of Justice codify that it will no longer seize journalists' records during leak investigations, Mr. Sulzberger said in a statement. We were encouraged by Attorney General Merrick Garland's statements, but we will continue to push until our concerns are addressed. The meeting came hours after Attorney General Merrick Garland had addressed the political uproar over the subpoena for congressional information, which the New York Times reported last week. He said he had asked his deputy, Lisa O'Monico, to review and toughen the department's existing policies for obtaining records of the legislative branch, noting that she was already working on surfacing potentially problematic matters deserving high-level review. Mr. Garland added, consistent with our commitment to the rule of law, we must ensure that full weight is accorded to separation of powers concerns moving forward. That announcement came as John C. Demers, the Trump administration official who leads the Justice Department's National Security Division, which oversees leak investigations, told his staff that he would step down at the end of next week. On Sunday, Democratic lawmakers had called for John C. Demers to testify about the subpoena that swept in congressional information, along with the former Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein and the former Attorney Generals Jeff Sessions and William Barr. But on Monday, 14th of June, Senator Mitch McConnell of Kentucky, the minority leader in the Senate, denounced those calls, saying that an investigation by the Justice Department's independent inspector general was sufficient. By calling for a congressional inquiry, he said, top Democrats gave in to the urge to pick at the scab of politically motivated investigations. The Department of Justice is empowered to investigate criminal conduct by members of Congress and their staff. Necessarily, this sort of investigation is subject to strict procedural protections, Mitch McConnell said. The department's inspector general is fully equipped to determine whether these procedures were followed. I'm confident that the existing inquiry will uncover the truth. He also said that it was particularly disappointing that our colleagues are attacking Bill Barr over investigative decisions that occurred when he wasn't there yet. The grand jury subpoena that swept up congressional information was dated February 2018, when Jeff Sessions and Rod Rosenstein were still the top two officials in the Justice Department. Still, after William Barr was sworn in the following year, the New York Times has reported, he brought in a trusted prosecutor with little relevant experience to help reinvigorate several leaked cases, including that involved congressional Democrats and their staff. Eventually, it was shut down without charges. Senator Richard Durbin of Illinois, the number two Democrat who has supported calling for former Attorney General to testify, pushed back at Mitch McConnell's suggestion that there was nothing amiss, asking, how would he know that? Senator Richard Durbin, who is also the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, sent a letter signed by the other 10 Democrats on that panel to Merrick Garland on Monday, asking for a copy of the subpoena and internal emails and other records related to it, and posing questions about its basis and purpose. Subpoena appears to have been part of a leak investigation that centered on a Democratic aide on the House Intelligence Committee. The New York Times has previously reported that it's listed 109 phone numbers and email addresses and sought account data linked to those numbers. Two lawmakers, Representatives Adam Schiff and Eric Swalwell, both Democrats of California, were among those whose account information Apple turned over, along with aides and a relative of Adam Schiff's. The broad subpoena appears to have been an example of a common technique investigators use when they obtain the communications records of a target. By subpoenaing electronic communication providers for any account information linked to those phone numbers or email addresses, they can identify the people with whom the target interacted. For example, many people own a smartphone that uses either Apple or Google's operating systems and register their phone numbers with one of those companies when setting up their devices. Those accounts may also have their names, addresses, email addresses, data about the phone and computer hardware they use to access the account, and sometimes even credit card numbers. While the controversies over secret Trump-era seizures of data about reporters and about lawmakers and their staff have partly emerged, there is an important difference. The phone data seized about reporters at the New York Times, the Washington Post, and CNN centered on a type of metadata, calling logs, that reveals whom people have spoken with. The Justice Department also carried out a related legal fight over a court order it obtained for logs of the reporters' emails, which can also reveal social contacts that spilled into the Biden era and included gag orders imposed on executives at the New York Times and CNN. By contrast, there is no sign that the subpoena to Apple could have provided investigators with the type of metadata that would offer a systematic look at the lawmaker's contacts with other people. According to law enforcement officials, prosecutors cannot use a grand jury subpoena to obtain email logs. Instead, they obtain court orders if they want to seize the information logging senders and recipients of emails and other types of electronic messages. Apple, which is not a phone company and does not generate traditional calling logs, has said it turned over only account subscriber information in response to the grand jury and that it did not provide any content such as emails or pictures.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
انسان را مطمئن می کند ذکر خدا ذکر الله تطمئن القلوب.
Be aware, the hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance.
Spring of truth. Dear brothers and sisters, You're listening to The Spring of Truth from IRIB English Radio. In this special episode, we select a short part of Imam Khomeini's will. Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him and his pure progeny, said, I leave two great and precious things among you, the Book of Allah and my household. In fact, by misusing the Holy Quran, which has brought the greatest material and spiritual guidance for humanity until the day it encounters the Prophet in the pool, they disposed of the Quran. They declared the divinely righteous rule, the ideals of the Holy Book.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitan rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Dear listeners, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. And you are listening to Spring of Truth coming to you from IRIB English Radio. So stay tuned with us. I am your host, Abdullah Al-Musawi, an Islamic researcher at the Seminary of Qom. We are looking at Imam Khomeini's point of view when it comes to Ashura. Imam Khomeini was quoted saying, knowing the entire instructions of the infallible Imams for observance of this historical epic of Islam and the curses levied on the oppressors of the Ahlul Bayt are all the epic cries for valiant nations in condemnation of the perpetrators of cruelty and oppression at all times in man's history. Imam Khomeini, from here, he's trying to emphasize on the fact that when we mourn for Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, that when we curse his oppressors, it's not just a statement that we make. Because many people say to us, well, it's all ended, they died, Bani Umayyah, Yazid is gone to hellfire, why do you keep insisting? Well, the idea is, Imam al-Hussein salamullah alayhi and Yazid are not just personalities, they are concepts. The concept of Hussein is renewed every time, where in every age you have those who stand for justice, for equality, for all the good moral values. And at all times you have people like Yazid who stand for oppression and all the moral and vices that you can think of. Ya Hayyu Ya Qayyum, Ya Hayyu Ya Qayyum. Imam Hussein salamullah alayhi is at the top. So every time we remember Imam Hussein, we are making a stand. We are staying with him. We are trying to prove that we are on the right side, not the corrupt side. As we say, iman and belief itself is just a thought, an idea, that it translates itself into an action to the outside. So once you start to curse those who caused oppression to the Ahlul Bayt, you're basically saying, I stand against any oppression, doesn't matter by who, but it has to begin from the inside. It has to begin by you rejecting. So Sayyid Khomeini's view in this regard is that every time that you curse, you're not only condemning Bani Umayyah, you're not only supporting the Ahlul Bayt, but you support anyone and any idea and any value that Imam Hussein alayhi salam stood for, and you condemn any ideology that Yazid stood for. So it's not a matter of just cursing, it's a matter of making a stand throughout your word verbally, and then you move forward and you put it into an action. Even Imam Hussein alayhi salam, he said that when a person sees an oppressive ruler, he needs to make a stand, and if he doesn't, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala will resurrect him with that oppressive ruler. Thank you for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
La ilaha food for thought.
Salam, and let us listen to a statement from the survivor of the tragedy of Karbala, Imam Zainul Abidin, peace upon him. Next to cognizance of God, nothing is more pleasing to him than chasteness of stomach and chasteness of sexual organs.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
The light.
Thousands of cows have descended from their summer quarters in the Swiss Alps to enjoy the warm temperatures of lower heights. The cattle herds spent 7 weeks in the Alpine Mountains, grazing at an altitude of nearly 2,000 meters. Their journey down started before sunrise and took almost 5 hours to complete. The cows, which couldn't make the trek due to injury, had already been carried down using trucks and helicopters. Farming has found an alternative look in the Netherlands, where cows produce milk on an eco-friendly floating farm. That may seem a surreal image of Rotterdam, the largest port in Europe. A herd of cows peacefully feed on board of what is known as the world's first floating farm. They live on the top floor of the three-story farm, while their milk is turned into dairy products on the other two floors. The floating farm opened in 2019. The owners say it aims to show the future of breeding and farming.
You must realize that the world is under pressure. Therefore, we have less and less land, agricultural land. Our idea is that in this way we can actually create agricultural land close to the city and also adaptable to the climate.
The floating farm is seen as a good alternative for normal farming in the Netherlands. That's a country with scarce land while being threatened by climate change. The farm's owners have also applied eco-friendly methods to make it durable and self-sufficient as much as possible. The methods include using solar panels and feeding the cows with grass from sports fields.
A
an Australian cyclist has become the first woman in history to pull off a front flip on a mountain bike. Caroline Buchanan landed the front flip at the OD9 cycling event in the German city of Birkenfeld. The maneuver won the former two-time Olympian the women's best trick title in the event. This was the first time the Nines featured a female category. The annual event gathers the world's best slopestyle and freeride mountain cyclists to Germany. A spectacular light show has mesmerized people in a Greek capital, Athens. 200 colorful drones performed a short harmonized display illuminating the night sky. Their colors and shapes were changing alongside music tracks. The show, organized by the Athens Cultural Center, took place 120 meters above the National Opera and Library. An Afghan woman has received the gift of life at a most unlikely time while flying. 26-year-old Saman Nouri was on a plane bound for Birmingham when she started having contractions. She gave birth to a little girl in an altitude of 10,000 meters with the help of the cabin crew. Born in Kuwaiti airspace, the baby is named Hawa, which means Eve or Air in Dari. Both mother and daughter are completely healthy. The aircraft was carrying Afghan citizens evacuated from Kabul. The passengers left behind their old lives, but were gifted with a new one in the process. After all, life does find a way. A French graffiti artist has created a monumental mountaintop project to encourage a more contemplative approach to life, aiming at lifting people's spirits. The giant 1,500 square meter painting is called A New Lease of Life. It was painted on the summit of Mollison Peak in the western Swiss Alps. The 32-year-old artist says he was inspired by the likeness of childlike wonder. The mural depicts a little boy blowing bubbles in an area known for its clouds. The artist says he wanted to reflect the link between children and sky gazing.
I think we live in a world that includes anxiety, and we need a little lightness to balance it. So I believe that the clouds mean dreams and imagination. When we were kids, we liked to imagine shapes in the clouds and so on. And I believe that this is a moment where we have to breathe and also imagine the world of tomorrow with a certain lightness through daydreaming.
Saip also says he designs his creations to fit in with the environment using biodegradable paints made from natural pigments. The French artist is known for his massive graffiti works on grass that are best seen from the air. Some of his other works have adorned an impoverished shanty town in South Africa and the lawn in front of the UN headquarters in Geneva. One of Mexico's largest zoos has launched a one-of-a-kind exhibition, with the star of the show being a manatee couple. Visitors will be able to see the couple at the new exhibition, which is part of the largest aquarium in the country. The zoo received the manatee couple from the Caribbean with the intention of raising awareness for the protection of the species. Part of the ticket proceeds will go towards conservation efforts. Manatees are fully aquatic, mostly herbivorous marine mammals that are sometimes known as sea cows. These funny-looking creatures are endangered because of pollution and fishing techniques.
Paleontologists in Egypt have discovered fossilized bones of an ancient whale that could probably walk on land and swim in water. Scientists found the skull, jaw, and some ribs and identified the parts as the 43-million-year-old ancestor of the modern whale. It's also the earliest type of semi-aquatic whale found in Africa. The whale is estimated to have been 10 meters in length, weighing over half a ton, and was likely a top predator. Scientists say the four-legged whale is a key new species that helps trace the transition of whales from land to sea. Paleontologists believe that the ancestors of modern whales developed from deer-like mammals living on land over a 10-million-year period. The fossilized remains were discovered in Egypt's western desert, which was once covered by sea. A French beekeeper has invented a unique device to keep his beehives safe after suffering a traumatic loss of 35 of them to hungry Asian hornets. The device is a one-way mechanism that baits hornets with sugary water, and once they get in through a funnel, they never come out. Originally, the trap was made of wooden crates and metal mesh, but now they are 3D printed in plastic. Dennis made his first lobster pot to catch the hornets in 2016 and now makes the traps in bulk due to growing demand. The Asian hornets are an invasive insect that arrived in France via a pottery shipment from China. The killer hornet can eat through an entire hive in a matter of hours. There is a festive occasion for a Mexican zoo amid a rare birth boom in its lion enclosure. Keepers and visitors are amazed to hear roars of three newborn cubs. The three baby lions that are trying very hard to roar were born just 2 weeks ago in Zacango Zoo. The zookeepers separate them from their mother for a few hours a day to feed them because their mother cannot produce milk. The two female and male cubs would live under constant surveillance for a couple of months so that their health is reassured. They are reported to be currently in good health.
The Light is a short bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
A bunker built by the German army in France during World War II has now been given a new lease of life by turning it into an underground guest house. A 4,300 square feet bunker located off Breton coast in northern France was originally built by Nazi troops after invading the country in 1940. The area has been the home of hundreds of such fortifications of the German army. Half of them have been buried along sandy beaches. This underground guest house now belongs to the 52-year-old bunker enthusiast. Serge Collio says it took 18 months to dig out the buried trench and turn it into a fully functional guest house. He says an attempt was made to preserve some historic aspects during its renovation.
What is nice is to now be able to spend time here, to have dinner, to spend the night in things like this. So we adapted the bunker while preserving a certain feel. We wanted to give the building a second life, so we are not going to live in the past forever. We saved some aspects, you know, where you are. There are historic cues, but this isn't a museum either.
Collio says many French visitors and foreigners, including Germans, have stayed in the guest house since the bunker opened a year ago. The world's highest expressway has opened to traffic in China's Tibet Autonomous Region. It's nearly 300 kilometers long and has an average elevation of 4,500 meters. It connects the cities of Nacho and Lhasa, shortening the travel time from 6 to 3 hours. The road passes through many picturesque areas, such as snowy mountains, grasslands, and wetlands. The expressway is also environmentally friendly. Special passages have been devised for animals to get from one side of the freeway to the other. An architectural firm in Singapore has come up with a unique idea to deal with the country's constant warm temperatures. A hotel on the island's busy business district has been covered with more than 20 species of creeping plants to keep the place cooler. A layer of vegetation blankets the facade of the Red Tower, which is growing thicker with the passage of time. The plants reduce the ambient temperature by a combination of water evaporation and releasing cooler vapor. The architect says the tower is 10 to 20 degrees Celsius cooler than nearby buildings. The green facades also reduce harmful carbon emissions, which account for over 20% in a sprawling city.
Youngest panda at the U.S.'s Smithsonian Zoo, National Zoo that is, has turned one. Baby panda Xiao Qiji celebrates the milestone by eating a specially made fruitsicle cake with his mother, Mei Xiang, in Washington, D.C. Both pandas dug into their icy cake, an ideal treat in the hot and humid summers of the U.S. capital. Xiao has captured hearts and had many first-time experiences. Some of them include sliding and tumbling around in snow and recognizing his name, which translates to little miracle in English.
He was born during the pandemic, and given the age of his mother, we didn't think she'd have another cub. And the fact that we, not just that we had this miracle, but he has just been, he's given people moments of pure joy and pure happiness.
Xiao Qiji is the fourth surviving cub of Mei Xiang. Its older siblings now live in China under an agreement with the United States. Pandas have been reclassified from endangered to vulnerable thanks to reforestation to expand habitats in which the species can survive. There are an estimated 1,800 giant pandas in the wild.
The annual Buddha sculpture has been unveiled at the New York State Fair to the delight of eager spectators. The artwork was sponsored for the 53rd year by the American Dairy Association. It was carved out of 400 kilograms of butter and took 10 days to build. The sculpture is dedicated to the children who will be going back to their normal lives after the coronavirus pandemic is over. Once the fair ends, all of the butter will be broken down and turned into renewable energy. Switzerland is constructing its biggest alpine solar plant in an effort to secure renewable energy throughout the year. The 2.2 megawatt plant is expected to be completed by the end of 2021. The Mutzi site will include nearly 5,000 solar modules and produce around 3.3 million kilowatt hours of electricity. It will have the option of delivering half of its production during the winter when temperatures drop to sub-zero levels in Switzerland. The developers say the project makes more environmental than fiscal sense. Currently, the country gets less than 4% of its electricity from solar power. An Nitri in Japan is giving disabled people a new lease on life by including them in its workforce. Dawn Cafe uses robotic staff controlled remotely by people who are handicapped. Around 50 people with mental and physical disabilities help run the cafe. The pilots come from all over Japan as well as overseas. The venue was established with support from major companies and crowdfunding. It has become more than just a place to eat for its customers.
Customers here are not exactly coming to this location just to meet the Orihime robots. They come here because of the people behind Orihime, and they will come back to see them again.
For Kentaro, Dawn Cafe has a very personal touch. In his childhood, he was left unable to go to school due to a period of bad health. Now he aspires to come up with ways to further the inclusion of disabled people in society.
Today's special.
Assalamu alaikum.
It's special for you. We present to you today. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of Allah, the Almighty, dear brothers and sisters, Assalamu alaikum. So welcome to this episode of today's special from IRIB English Radio. I invite you to listen to this episode. The topic of this episode is how to cope with failure. But first, let's check the calendar. Today, Saturday, is the 26th of Muharram, 1443 of the Islamic Lunar Hijri calendar, corresponding to the 13th of Shahrivar, 1400 of the Islamic Solar Hijri calendar, and the 4th of September, 2021 of the Christian Gregorian calendar. We bless this moment of today's special by recitation of chapter Al-Baqarah, verse 177.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. ليس البر أن تولوا وجوهكم قبل المشرق والمغرب ولكن البر من آمن بالله ولكن البر من آمن بالله واليوم الآخر والملائكة والكتاب والنبيين وآتى المال على حبه ذوي القربى واليتامى والمساكين وابن السبيل والسائلين وفي الرقاب وأقام الصلاة وآتى الزكاة والموفون بعهدهم إذا عاهدوا والصابرين في البأساء والضراء وحين البأس أولئك الذين صدقوا وأولئك هم المتقون.
Righteousness is not that you turn your faces toward the east or the west, but true righteousness is in one who believes in Allah, the last day, the angels, the book, and the prophets, and gives wealth, in spite of love for it, to relatives, orphans, the needy, the traveler, those who ask for help and for freeing slaves, and who establishes prayer and gives zakah, those who fulfill their promise when they promise, and those who are patient in poverty and hardship and during battle. Those are the ones who have been true, and it is those who are the righteous.
La ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah.
Bless your day with contemplation on the verses of the Holy Quran.
The faith of a person in Allah causes him to be humble before Him and to stand firm with no obedience before tyrants, where the faith in resurrection creates eyesight and magnanimity, and faith in angels refers to the existence of belief in the processes of supernatural, including the faith in revelation, providence, and etc. Faith in prophets is a belief in a straight way and true guidance existing throughout history. It is evidence leading to the fact that man has never been aimless and absolutely free in this world.
Reflecting on different Islamic topics, short commentary of the Holy Quran, hadiths of the infallibles, lessons from the life of the infallibles, all in today's special from IRIB English Radio.
We're going to speak about cope with failure and loss. After having tried our best, our failure in examinations, in marriage, in a business, or in any test is not the end of the world. Countless people have been there before us, picked up the pieces, tried again, and succeeded. Some have even succeeded after many attempts and have gone a very long way thereafter. It is those who refuse to come to terms with reality who punish themselves by believing that such losses are eternal. This leads to their lives coming to a standstill whilst others progress and causes depression, which results in further loss. Many people have tasted loss and failure in some aspect of their lives to different degrees. This can be a gift at times, as the Almighty gives us something far better in return, or helps us to mature and draw closer to Him, understanding our purpose in life better. With the help of the Almighty comes true success.
Dr. Fakhr Rohani.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim wa bi nasta'in. In this episode, we are going to be concerned with how to cope with failure. Failure is a reality in life. That is, almost everybody experiences failure. And apparently, failure brings about disappointment. Now we find that, for example, in the life of Steve Jobs, who's been renowned figure, especially in the Western world, he was once expelled from the company that he had established and founded. We find that it happens to everybody. Not many hours, but perhaps several years I spent in a way, but the final result out of all the efforts and the outcome of all efforts would be almost nothing, not what that had been anticipated in the beginning. According to some research, conducted by research staff of Harvard University in the U.S., 70% of 70% of jobs and 70% of jobs and smaller scale projects lead to disappointment and lead to failure in the first 5 years. Now we find that some people may feel very much disappointed, such that they wouldn't continue the same line, or they wouldn't be that much in the mood of initiating other projects or commencing other projects.
IRIB English Radio presents today's special, Every Day for 15 Minutes.
Be like the sun, shining with light. Be like a rose, spreading its fragrance in every palm.
Today's special.
Be like the earth, humble and wise. Be like the rain.
Now, how to cope with failure according to psychology? One step is being kind to yourself. It's an old one, but a good one. Practice some self-compassion. Being self-compassionate entails being kind and non-judgmental towards yourself in the face of difficulty, including failure. Perhaps the best-known proponent of self-compassion is Christian Neff at the University of Texas. Back in 2005, Neff published work finding that students who are self-compassionate in the wake of exam failure go on to study harder for the future exams. More recent work has found that being kind to yourself if you feel that you failed at something and recognizing that you are far from alone in failure is linked with better mental health. And self-compassion is even linked to greater physical health, too, according to a recent study in BMC Published Health.
To teach us the words of Allah, mercy and kindness and hope for everyone. Peace be upon you, O Muhammad.
Now, let's look at the benefits of failure. Failure keeps us hungry and humble. The biggest enemy of long-term success is complacency. History is littered with stories of one great nations, cultures, and companies that bank on the notion that a successful past guarantees a successful future. But failure has a way of motivating us, of keeping us hungry and also humble. People who know from experience that fortunes can be lost, that competitors never sleep, that downsizing happens, and that every market boom can go bust tend to be more highly driven and much more intentional.
Think that if you want to be a successful Muslim, you isolate yourself. Islam does not believe in isolation, and that you go and you become monks or isolate yourselves in your homes. No. Islam, half of it is theoretical knowledge at the theoretical level. Half of it is implementing that knowledge in society. So if you have that knowledge, but you lock yourself up in a room, and you don't go out there in society every single day, deal with people, then you're not worshiping God the way He wants you. If you isolate yourself, you have failed to understand Islam. Because Islam wants you to be active in your community. That's part of Islam. Do business with people, deal with people, help people, have social relations. That's the biggest challenge, really. The most successful person is the one who maintains positive social relations with people, yet observes the boundaries of Allah. This person is the greatest worshiper in the eyes of God. Not the person
who locks himself up in his house and worships God. That's not a big achievement. Anybody could do that, stay home and worship God. The real achievement is to go out there in society, in the workplace, and observe the laws of God. That's tough. But that's the highest form of worship. The Imam is not saying this person is going to hell and Allah will not accept for him. No, no, no. But that's the lowest type of faith. You want the higher types of faith? Want to really understand Islam? Go out there in society. Be active in society. Yet observe the laws of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and be positive with all people.
Dear friend, thank you very much for joining us till this moment of today's special from IRIB English Radio. I think that's a good discussion to continue. So we are with today's special, inshallah, on the next episode and the topic of how to cope with failure. Till then, fi amanillah.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.